You're listening to Freethinker Radio on 90.1 KPFT Houston, your home for uncensored news and underground music since 2011.
All right. I love broadcasting in 5 o'clock hour on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston. I'm very happy that we can reach from Galveston Bay all the way up to Lake Livingston in the fourth largest city and more in this country. Also, I think I just heard a misnomer. Free Thinker Radio does no longer exist. In fact, maybe that should be something we say every episode. That's the new name of the show, Free Thinker Radio no longer exists.
Yeah, we mentioned this last week, guys, that we're going through a transition. Micah and I have been broadcasting this show for over 10 years now, since the summer of 2011. And we've been thinking, well, you know, it's been a while. Why don't we change things up, mix things up a little bit? And, you know, our origins started with the Houston Freethinkers Activist Group. And the website that we use is the HoustonFreethinkers.com, where you can find all our archives for our show, as well as, of course, on KPFT's website at kpft.org and on Spotify. But all of those platforms are going to start reflecting our new name change. You know, when we were involved with the Houston Freethinkers, one of the main, I guess you could say, mottos or themes that that activist group tried to embody was what we would say, live free, think free. And so we, between myself, Micah, and Johnny, who's not here tonight, we figured, you know what, that's the best way probably to continue to represent what we're doing here and to keep that phrase alive.
Yeah, definitely. I like that as a name. We did throw some others around. We had some suggested.
It's our roots.
I think that one's pretty good. We're not settled entirely. It might be. We could keep you in suspense for a few more episodes, right? Who knows? But we got all kinds of things going on. We're going to get into the news, local and international. We're going to get into talking about the economy. We're going to play all kinds of new music. We got music that was sent to us, I believe, that we're going to get
into. We'll be playing some new music this evening from John Cameron, who I believe, I'll have to check the email, I think is either from Australia or New Zealand. A drummer, musician, put together a song called Our Freedoms, and he reached out because, as we say every episode, we're always looking for new music. We have a playlist here of a lot of different independent music. These are not things that you're going to find, you know, on the radio. And for those of you who don't even listen to the radio anymore, these are not things you're going to find that are going to be maybe in the mainstream of the YouTube playlist or Spotify playlist, the iTunes playlist and things of that sort, but extremely talented musicians. And also, you know, we've a big part of the Houston Freethinkers, Freethinker Radio, Live Free, Think Free, what we are now, has always been bringing art, music, culture, activism together. And so, yeah, I think it just fits our mode. So in addition to bringing you uncensored news, which we're going to be covering for the next 55 minutes here, we also feature underground independent music and of a wide variety of genres. We'll play anything, really, you know, put it out here. It has to be for the radio, FCC friendly. But either way, we're happy to put it out there and share it. So yeah, tonight we'll be sharing some new music from John Cameron, and maybe we'll see what else we can get into in the meantime. But should we go ahead and just dive into it, Micah? We got a lot of interesting stories to cover tonight. So as always, we start with some Houston news. We'll start talking about some national United States, North America news, and then get international with it as well. Talk about Sri Lanka and some of the latest developments of what we covered a couple of weeks ago when there was the people storming the palace and swimming in the presidential pool and all that. Things have changed quite a bit since then, and we're going to catch up on that situation as well as what Micah said, some economic news, which I think is increasingly important with people dealing with inflation. I've noticed more and more concerns about food supplies and food shortages and things like that, so lots to cover. And let's go ahead and start with this story I got pulled up here from Houston.
We're going to talk about guns.
Yeah, and it has to do with Houston and guns. So last month when I was in Houston, or when May, I think it was, I went and did some interviews in downtown Houston at the National Rifle Association, NRA convention that was taking place in downtown Houston. I did some interviews with people, just letting them share their stories of why they were there, why the Second Amendment matters to them, or maybe why they thought it is important to start talking about gun restrictions and, you know, regulations and things like that. So we've been following this conversation, and clearly, there's the Uvalde shooting that took place in Texas. Recent weeks, we've got to see that the video of the police, I don't know if you saw that, Micah, where the cops are just standing in the hallway for like 77 minutes before going in there. And really, it just seems like they were afraid. And I'm sure it's scary if you know there's like an armed person, an 18-year-old dude with some high-powered guns. But I guess that's the time when it's supposed to be your job, right? Like, that's why we're supposed to...
That's where you're wrong, Derek. That's where you're wrong. The Supreme Court's already said that they're...
They don't have to protect us. Yep. Yeah, you're right about that. Well, I guess most people believe, right, that that's what the case is. So my point is we're stepping into this kind of deeper conversation, and this just in the last couple of weeks, the Houston... City of Houston and the Houston Police have made some announcements regarding a new program that they're going to be doing in just a couple of days here. And so this press release comes from Houston website, the Houston City website, the Office of the Mayor. And it says, Mayor Sylvester Turner, Harris County Commissioner Rodney Ellis, and Houston Police Department launched gun buyback program, part of the city's county efforts to combat violent crime. So the City of Houston, Harris County Precinct 1, and the HPD announced details of a gun buyback program just recently, a couple days ago, at Wheeler Avenue Baptist Church. The first gun buyback event will allow people to exchange firearms for gift cards on July 30th, so that's, you know, about a week or so away, from 8 a.m. to noon at the Wheeler Avenue Baptist Church. This is in Third Ward. The gun buyback program is part of the One Safe Houston initiative. And just side note, Micah, I know we talked about this last week on one of the stories that you were talking about with businesses. I can't recall the details, but the One Safe Houston initiative, which is costing millions of dollars for the city, this is the mayor's claim of how he's going to make the city safer. It's also the same initiative that requires businesses to put cameras on their own businesses. So this One Safe Houston thing is a pretty big program affecting a lot of different areas. Gun buyback programs, video cameras on businesses, whether they like it or not, are facing fines, all kinds of measures. So this is, it says the city is investing $1 million for this program. We're partnering with the Harris County Precinct Commissioner Rodney Ellis to have the greatest impact to get unwanted and dangerous guns off the street. This is one tool we are using to combat violent crime. There are too many guns on the street. I encourage Houstonians to turn in their unwanted guns, which could save a life, yada, yada, yada. So with no questions asked, even if they're stolen, like there's no like, did you steal this? Where did this come from? Like no questions asked. People who turn in their guns, and honestly, these are not great prices at all. People who turn in their guns will receive a $50 gift card for every non-functioning gun, $100 for a rifle, $150 for a handgun, and $200 for an assault rifle. All firearms must be unloaded and inside the vehicle's trunk. So you're supposed to like pull in, just, you know, talk to them, tell them what you got, and then they open up the trunk and get it out. And so, you know, you're not even getting out of the car, walking around carrying your gun.
There really are some bad handguns, though. I'll say at a Bill 50. There are some really bad handguns out there, like in the Bill 20 range, Bill 25. You might be able to make a quick $25 and get a real gun.
An assault rifle for $200? That sounds
that sounds like a ripoff for sure. You should not do that one. But you know, if you got some barely functional old handguns, it sounds like you could come up a little bit and get yourself a real gun out of this program. I mean,
yeah. Well, I want to explore a couple of areas with this, Micah. I mean, it's just like a local story thing, right? But I remember seeing that. The reason I think this is important, and I was saying it in the context of the gun conversation that's going on, I was doing some research a while back about Australia's gun laws, and I know we have Australian listeners who tune in. And Australia, I want to say it was in 1997, they had this mass shooting where a good amount of people were killed, 20 or so people, maybe. Let me see if I can pull it up. And essentially, that was the beginning of Australia starting to do different restrictions on gun laws, and that shortly was followed up with gun buyback programs where people started like turning in their guns by the thousands because they had sort of been, I think in some cases, guilted into like, you know, look, your gun rights are allowing for these kind of crimes, you know, and so people started just selling back their guns. And so that's kind of what I think is interesting is seeing this in the context of that. But the other thing is, two things is, I've seen forms of activism. If somebody feels so creative in Houston, I've heard there might be some people where they go out there and like, let's say, for example, wherever they're meeting at this church, right? So they're going to have people pull into the church. So maybe some people set up right next door with some signs and say, hey, we'll give you $250 for the assault rifles, or, you know, like just edge them out a little bit. And I've seen this where people will come out and compete with the local governments or whatever and offer better prices and go out there and get themselves or the community or their families or whatever some weapons. Now, again, like if somebody's coming to sell some weapons that have had crimes committed on them, you maybe don't want to be buying them. But I think it is an interesting part of the conversation, seeing people kind of compete with that instead of letting the government, like, don't let the government buy your guns for so cheap. You know, here, we'll give you a better deal, maybe not as much as they would get elsewhere, but still a better deal than just giving it to the government for gift cards.
And then the last thing I'll say on that is I think as well, besides people maybe feeling guilty, oh, I'm a gun owner, shootings are happening, some people realistically with the conditions going on in the country and around the world might be thinking about selling guns because of financial troubles or inflation or, you know, I mean, not to say like a $50 gift card, a $100 gift card, or $200 gift card is going to go far or last long, but it might help some people. And maybe they're in a position where they're like, this gun's not doing me any good. I need cash more than I need this gun. I don't know if that's a wise decision, but yeah. So just trying to think of like why people would want to sell it besides just being told that their guns are bad.
I don't know. It does seem like an opposite trend though, because gun sales are up. They're selling more than Ford trucks, actually. I just saw an article on that. But I don't know, you know, I imagine there's got to be some sort of just, you know, pressure. And if you believed guns were bad, why would you have had one in the first place? I don't know. I think it's a confusing situation. I do think it's an interesting idea, though, to go out there and get a little bit competitive with the, you know, low price there. That's interesting. And I think, you know, I don't know if we have other Houston stories, but if not, with the mall story might fit in well with the topic.
Let's go into that one.
Cool. You know, everybody knows what happened in Uvalde recently, and it's, you know, it's sad. And you brought it up earlier, Derek. So, you know, it fits. There was the one about more guns being sold than Ford trucks that just went by. But yeah, you know, so, you know, we're talking about getting guns off the street, but here three men were killed in a shooting by a man in the mall in Indiana. As if malls don't have enough problems. That's kind of uncool. People are going to the mall, you know, and you got to go do that. So some other people were injured, not to make it seem real small, but if you get down a little bit further into the story, it mentions that the thing was stopped by an individual who had a gun. An armed civilian shot and killed him. Now, what if this guy had just gone to a gun buyback program? Would he have been there to stop that? I don't know. And I'm a little bit frustrated because when I read here that three people were killed in a mall by a man who went there with a rifle, okay, and I look at the difference between this and Uvalde, one of the things that stands out right away is the fact that nobody's allowed to have a gun in a school zone, right? I mean, nobody's really allowed to have a gun. So the teachers can't have guns, you know, other people working there can't have guns. You can't just have a normal citizen in America who hasn't committed, you know, a violent crime, who has a gun, stop these situations. Instead, you've got government, what is it? Government efficiency, 300, what was it? 350, 370 officers there. And how long did it take? An hour plus, you know? So I don't know. Here's a story where an individual who was legally carrying a firearm shot and killed a gunman, you know? So I think it's relevant to the conversation. These stories don't get mentioned as often in the news, but they're pretty regular. Yeah.
It's interesting. This guy is only 22 years old as well. 22-year-old from nearby Bartholomew County, legally carrying a firearm at the mall and shot and killed the gunman. And I'm happy to report that this case didn't end like my friend Johnny Hurley, who we've reported on over the last year, who did the same thing in Colorado, Arvada, and stopped a mass shooting, but then was killed by the police. And the police covered it up, and, you know, it's still kind of an ongoing investigation. Thankfully, in this case, the guy was able to stop further casualties. And yeah, you're right, Micah, these stories do happen and maybe are more common than people might be told by certain media. But guns can and save lives. You know, in fact, like, who do you think when there is a mass shooter, they send other people, cops, government of officer people, officials with guns to try to save the day, right? Like, so, I mean, clearly guns are tools, weapons that can be used in a positive or really detrimental way. But these stories aren't really going to get the coverage that maybe they should.
And I guess the dialogue, if we want to just give it the dialogue of guns a moment, the question seems to be, you know, who has the right to this technology? Who has the right to have a gun? And, you know, what does that mean? And it seems like more and more people are starting to question, you know, that aspect of life. And not that there's anything wrong with questioning it. I do think that when you question it, though, you have to look at what it really is. Is it really just bad people who have guns that are killing people? I mean, or is there good guys with guns sometimes, or not, maybe not even good guys, but guys or women that stop further violence because they incidentally have you know, something that can counter it. And no, it doesn't always have to be a gun, but often in our times it is.
Absolutely. I want to remind everybody you're listening to Live Free, Think Free on 90.1 KPFT Houston and on the Conscious Resistance Network. We go live across Facebook. We're live on YouTube for this show for the first time in over almost 2 years. We're live on Rockfin, Odyssey, and DLive. So lots of places to catch this. And of course, the archives go to thehoustonfreethinkers.com. And yeah, I mean, we've got some more to cover. I'm going to go ahead, Micah, and play one of these songs, that song we talked about, John Cameron. We'll get a music break in early. And when we come back, we're going to continue talking about digital identity, this conversation we've had for since the beginning of the show. But in the last couple of weeks, it seems like these stories just keep piling up. And so we're going to talk about some more warnings and then a couple of real world examples. And we're going to get into some economic news as well. So yeah, this song is called Our Freedoms, and it's from John Cameron, sent this to me. And thank you, John, for reaching out. And again, anybody else who wants to reach out, you can contact us at thehoustonfreethinkers.com or the email, Micah, the visionary noise.
Yeah, visionarynoise@gmail.com would be great. That's an easy one.
Okay, great. All right, yeah, and then you can get your song featured on our show, on the radio, and all the channels that we broadcast to. So check this out. We will be right back.
To flatten the curve, the politician said, and became a political obsession. They closed my school, but that couldn't work. We have to now eliminate this virus, so they locked us down, on and on. Human rights removed quietly, they tested for false positives to boost up. Advising or treating, the hospitals burst from the fear. We must get tested, Mom said. So we sat in line hours and hours. When the vaccines came along, the politician said, you'll die if you don't get a shot. Couldn't be the vaccine. They closed my school, my dad couldn't work. We have to now eliminate this virus, so they locked us down, on and on. Human rights removed quietly, they tested for false positives to boost up COVID-19. And why do we now need two shots of vaccine? Suddenly died. Why was it after the vaccine? And why do we now need boosters as well? Why does the media hype up fear? Why are there so many people asleep? I could see I was just 16. They school, my dad couldn't work. We have to now eliminate this virus, so they locked us down, on and on. Human rights removed quietly, they tested for false positives to boost up COVID-19. Countries overseas were part lost this routine. So why did we keep on and on? Why did people follow like sheep? This reset has taken our freedoms. Our freedoms, our freedoms. This new world has taken our freedoms.
All right. That was pretty good. At first, I was kind of like, okay, this seems kind of mellow, but you know what's important about it? And I kind of started grooving with it too. I like the end as well. But what I thought was really important is, you know, it's like the history aspect of it, you know, because if you listen, he sort of has that whole vibe that he's telling us the story of what happened already. And it's important that artists get out there and they, you know, we're talking about the narrative, right? And here we are just a little bit after the event. You know, we saw this with 9/11. We've seen it with other events. It's really important that people get out there and start saying, because, you know, there's some people that are going to vibe with the music more than they do the message, and then they're going to hear the message. You know, at the same time, it's really important that individuals such as the man who created the art here have the ability to express what they experienced. You know, I mean.
Absolutely. That was just for everybody a reminder, if you didn't catch it, that was John Cameron, Our Freedoms. You can find him on YouTube. I don't know where else, but check out his YouTube channel. Just search John Cameron, Our Freedoms, and that should pop up for you. And as we said before, if you got songs you want to share, let us know. Let's go ahead and just jump in. We still got some more to cover, some more ground to cover. I do want to shout out everybody listening over on Odyssey, Rockfin, DLive, YouTube, and Facebook. Shout out to Death to Tyrants, who said respect to Derek and Micah over off Rockfin. Thank you for that. We appreciate your support. Let's continue on our dive into some of the insanity going on in the world right now. As I mentioned last week, I talked about this article I was doing on the NYU University School of Law. I put together this report warning that digital identity was, in their own words, potentially paving a digital road to hell. A road where human rights violations would be rampant, privacy would be absent, and ultimately, you know, liberty, I think as most people see it, would be gone because of the threats posed by digital identity. So we're going to pick up the conversation from there. I encourage you, if you didn't hear that story, go check it out last week. You can also find this the article that I wrote for it at thelastamericanvagabond.com. It's titled New York School of Law Warns Digital ID Paving a Digital Road to Hell. And that kind of builds on another article I did months ago called Exposing the Digital ID as a Human Rights Scam. And this is kind of where the conversation today is, I think, is a good starting point as we move through what's happening in the U.S. and then look at what's happening internationally in relation to digital identity biometrics. So we got the New York School of Law, their Center for Human Rights and Global Justice. This is, they've actually been talking about these kinds of concerns for a couple of years, and they put out a 100-page report detailing these threats. They looked at India's Aadhaar Foundation biometric ID system, and they show examples of human rights violations and of it, despite all the talk of it being inclusive and helpful for the poor, not really always working out that way and rarely working out that way. They kind of take note how there is a network, what they describe as a network of key global actors like the World Bank, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the OMIDR network, and then different governments and foundations and tech companies that are actively promoting this need for digital identity and biometrics. And get into some of the dangers of it. So that's sort of the background for this. Now, the article that I want to talk about today is from FCW.com, and it's talking about a digital identity bill. This is about a week old, but it's still really important right now. Digital identity bill sees action in the House and Senate. And it's just sort of like a little vague overview for myself, but it's making the point that the U.S. government is, and has been for a while, but this is the latest attempt, is considering digital identity legislation. This one's called the Improving Digital Identity Act, first introduced by Representative Bill Foster of Illinois in 2020, but it was never voted out of the committee. Now it's kind of coming back and it's been reintroduced. So the House committee just last week, before they recessed, they voted on this bill and others to get them out of the committee and, you know, continue to work on them.
So it goes into that, just talking about the different way the government is going to try to actively promote digital identity, things of that sort. But I came over here to congress.gov and found the bill. It's Senate Bill 4528, Improving the Digital Identity Act of 2022. And let me see if I can find the section. There's a section here where I thought it was interesting, Micah, that the whatever official, somebody was able to get this in here, where it basically would say that they couldn't make the digital identity a requirement for like regular life, or it couldn't be used as, like trying to sort of, I guess, preempt potential for it to be used in pretty nefarious ways. I can't find the exact text right here at this moment, but I'll pull it up and just, okay, here it is. It says, the bill has a new section prohibiting the task force, this task force on digital identity, from recommending the creation of a single identity credential or a central national ID registry, as well as, quote, a requirement that any individual be forced to use digital identity verification for a given public purpose. So again, they're kind of like, if the bill passed, it would basically lead to, you know, a task force being created and a report. Like, it's not immediate legislation or anything like that, but they're trying to preemptively say, hey, like, this committee or this task force cannot recommend digital identity be used for general purposes, like, you know, kind of just in creating the purpose of creating a national ID base. So yeah, before we take international, what do you think about that? I mean, is this just all but an inevitability at this point, after we saw things like immunity passports, vaccine passports, and digital identities normalized in that way? You think this is just, it's going to happen one way or the other?
I think sometimes just putting bills forward, you know, makes it go into the dialogue, right? So then whether it passes or not, it's in the discussion. But the other aspect of this is, if they're not going to make it, you know, required for any public, not required in that manner, then what's the real point of it? If they're not going to have a repository of it, what's the point of it? So what, they're going to have multiple repositories of it because it'll be on multiple blockchains or what? You know, I mean, I'm not sure what the language means to our everyday existence and how that ties into people's concerns about digital identity, you know, concerns like, you know, Fourth Amendment or privacy or identity theft, economic crimes, those sort of things. So I'm not really sure, you know, this is a lot to unpack, and I think it'd take more than one of our episodes, but I think those are the type of questions we need to be able to ask. And not just with this bill, but with probably all of them. And they're always, I mean, what did you get was the purpose of it then, Derek? If it's not going to be used in any of those ways, what's the purpose of it?
I mean, I think that there's a chance for one, like this thing is super early, right? So they just got voted out of committee at the moment. So, I mean, that's that, the language could completely change and that whole thing could get struck by the end of this bill's life if it does become law. So that's one thing, right? Just because they put that in there now doesn't mean it's going to stay there. But yeah, you're right. If that does stay in there, then it gets the point of like, what's the whole purpose of that? I think overall, even if it's like this particular bill, what do they call it? Identity Act or whatever. Isn't the one that there's a new digital national ID card, whatever, that you have to use to get in and out of everywhere. Even if that bill isn't this one, I think overall it still is a process of normalizing the need for that. And that's what this NYU report was talking about, how you have these different institutions, think tanks, Bill and Melinda Gates foundations, groups like that, and then the UK and US government and the World Bank and World Economic Forum, certain players that are putting out reports and promoting this idea that digital identity is necessary. It's how we're going to get the unbanked into the modern world and how we're going to save all the people and make the world better and yada, yada. And so there clearly is somebody clearly has an agenda or a desire for the people to adopt this and to push this on the people. I don't think it's coming from the bottom up, ground up people. I mean, I haven't met too many people out on, you know, the countryside, the indigenous people of Mexico who are begging for digital identity. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's one thing to take away as well.
You don't ask your friends for their digital ID to prove them who they are?
I don't typically, but also to, you know, make it even more real is I don't know if we've talked about, I'm sure we have over the last couple of years, but I'm sure some people out there have seen it in different states. There's already what they're calling DDLs, digital driver's licenses, that are starting to become a thing in certain U.S. states. And I even saw somebody say in New Zealand that's a thing. And I wanted to just show two other examples before we get to Sri Lanka and this discussion around digital identity, but also just the digital world in general. The digital identity, I think it's clear it's going to be a part of the central bank digital currency system. Well, is just being reported by the Free Thought Project, the Office of Financial Research, which is an independent bureau within the U.S. Department of Treasury, has basically put out a paper calling for central bank digital currencies as a way to counter bank runs. I just want to mention that. You know, we don't have time to get into that. Another one, how I was just talking about the NYU School of Law. Well, now we also got this other organization, which I'm not sure, we want to fully trust them, but it's a special report from the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace that also says that AI-driven, artificial intelligence-driven surveillance signals the death of privacy. They specifically call it a digital authoritarianism in one of their new reports. So, you know, this conversation is becoming more and more clear to people who are paying attention. It's not something that's on the front page of CNN. It's not something that's going to be in the, you know, on most corporate mainstream media for various reasons. But these are things that I really think are going to either signal the freedom that we may have left or the end of it, right? And, you know, here's an example. A couple of weeks ago, we're talking about Sri Lanka, that small nation, people sick of, there was protests for a lot of reasons, but part of it was gas taxes and hikes and food prices and things of that sort, which we're also seeing in the Dutch protest and other places happening. Well, we saw people storming the capital, right? Not the U.S. capital, but the palace, the Sri Lankan palace, and the president having to leave, and people in the pool, and it was like, wow, what's going on? We talked about last week how the protesters said they were not going to give in. They're going to keep protesting until things change. Well, then it was announced a new policy by Sri Lankan Minister of Power and Energy, Kanchana Wijesekera, apologies for that, at the behest of Sri Lanka's new president. They now have a new president, Ranil. I didn't
see that guy in the pool.
Yeah, I didn't see him. But this president just comes out of nowhere. And guess what? He's a member and agenda contributor of the World Economic Forum, those folks who are behind the push for what they call the Great Reset. We can see here's his page right here. Already updated. He's the prime minister of Sri Lanka. Wow, that was quick. They got him updated and ready to go. And he's the new prime minister. And so the Minister of Power and Energy, at the behest of this new prime minister, who's a member of the World Economic Forum, has announced a QR system in order to get gas. Quote, after initial technical issues, FuelPass QR system was successfully tested today. The pilot project will continue before going national next week. Last digit number plate fuel quota will ease the fuel lines in the next few days with distribution speeding up worldwide. I thank the fuel station owners who supported, the public that adopted and assisted, forces and volunteers that assisted. Some stations did not adopt it. Some individuals manipulated QR codes and didn't want this implemented. However, it will be enforced island-wide. And this is their new thing, a national fuel pass in order to get gas. This is their way of dealing with the ongoing problem. And for those who are watching on screen, we have a video here from Twitter showing Sri Lanka requiring citizens to have fuel pass QR code to ration the weekly amount of fuel. And you can see a video here with them looking at the application, and it's telling them, I think, the amount of fuel they've used that week, and it's showing regular folks here scanning their QR code to get the information of how much gas they get this week for their rations. And then there's another video, army and fuel stations in Sri Lanka after the government decision to ban the sale of petrol and diesel to non-essential vehicles. So, you know, this is a pretty, and like I told you, Michael, a couple of weeks ago when I was in Mexico near the border, I was getting nervous feeling the gas running out, but I didn't think anything like, wow, what if I had to get a QR code just to get gas?
Well, separate from the QR code, I mean, this is the power of it, right? It allows them to shut it off for everyone, anyone. That's the power of a central bank digital currency too, for the economics to be managed right down to your individual, you know, monetary plan. But I thought that was really interesting that, you know, we talked last episode a lot about the economics, as well as we've mentioned Sri Lanka a few episodes now and just the turmoil going on there. But talking about it from an economic perspective, are we surprised with what's been happening with the government's reactions to what's been happening, that at this point now they're, you know, restricting the sale of gas to basically themselves and, you know, their approved cronies or whatever? I mean, because it's only essential vehicles, so we maybe it's ambulances and that sort of thing only, but I tend to doubt it.
Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe you're right. Maybe it is like some things that make sense, like emergency vehicles and stuff like that, but I would doubt that it's going to be as just simple and you know, lacking in corruption like that, especially because this change seems to be happen quickly. The people are upset. One of the prime ministers being run out, and then now there's a new one, and then he announces, like, hey, this is the way we're going to deal with this, in a way that is totally
– He's a way that, guy.
a way that I think is totally in line with things like the World Economic Forum's plans or discussions around, you know, vaccine passports, immunity passports, digital identities, CBDCs. These are all ideas that the World Economic Forum has been promoting, not just since the beginning of COVID-19, but for years when the chairman of the World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab, wrote books like The Fourth Industrial Revolution back in 2016 and has been talking about that. So they see this as technology and is going to be, you know, the kind of center of our world, smart cities, AI, facial recognition, social credit scores, central bank digital currencies, digital identity, and that it's going to be good for the environment, sustainable, diverse, inclusive, all this stuff. But I mean, what we're trying to share here in this little section is that it doesn't necessarily, there's no guarantee that that's going to be the case. And I want to also remind Michael, you just made me think of this, that we covered this a couple of weeks ago. There was this story that was reported by The Independent in Ireland about some documents that they got access to showing that there would be, the Irish government was planning for lockdowns and work for home plans in case of a crisis caused by the Ukraine war. And this is specifically a high level planning exercise that proposed three fuel supply deficit scenarios. So this was specifically about, hey, what do we do if there's a fuel shortage? And one of them included encouraging people to walk, encouraging people to stay home, lockdowns, you know, stay home for the climate kind of thing. All non-essential workers, there's that word again, being ordered to work from home, limit placed on non-essential car travel, strict limit on the amount of fuel motorists can buy, implementation of an immediate and strict reduction in the speed limit, things like that. So, yeah, I mean, clearly these discussions have been had by certain governments, and maybe some of them are looking at what's going on in Sri Lanka and thinking like, if only we had a system like that in place.
Yeah. And I think some of those thoughts just come naturally to governments, especially unrestrained governments, you know. So I think they're always trying to solve future problems that, you know, get out there and appear to sell solutions. So, yeah, it's interesting. We'll see what happens. I think following what happens in Sri Lanka will be, you know, show us some things. I'm sure that when stability does return, whatever modicum of it is, will be sold the entire time that it's due to all these great implementations of the World Economic Forum's plan.
Yeah, I'm sure exactly. They'll say it was only because of the help of all these people that we were able to succeed. Let's take another quick music break, Micah, and come back as we wrap up. We have about 20 minutes left on the show, but we're going to be covering some financial news when we get back, talking about gold, talking about the European Central Bank, talking about what's going on in China again. We've been covering that banking scandal, which kind of relates to the same thing, right? Last week we were talking about how they locked people out of the banks and their ability to protest by using the digital identity, the COVID ID, you know, that came about during those times. So it's all the stories, kind of, you're starting to see this thread running through them. So let's play Luxury from Jeremy Carswell, and we'll be right back. Live free, think free.
Right back. Live free, think free.
Yeah. secret promise between you and me. Your voice is clear when you sing. It's a gift for you and me. Paper scene, purple, pink, orange, red, blues and greens. But what you love is everything. Green lights, follow me. This love is
right, Jeremy Carswell from his album 2025 Luxury. I like the way that song kind of deconstructs right there at the end. It's kind of smooth. I like to think about that type of music driving around. All those words but like neon lights and nighttime and make me think about being out at night. So yeah, we're always glad to play the music here. Keep sending it to us. Hope y'all are enjoying being turned on to some of it, and go on and find other, you know, what you like from us. You go on and find other music from these acts. So, I don't know what
to do. Yeah, let's do it. We got a couple more articles to cover tonight. Mainly, we're going to focus on the financial aspect for these last 15 minutes or so. But we are live on numerous platforms, that we love hearing your comments. You can always contact us at thehoustonfreethinkers.com. Message us there if you've got something you heard, you want to share something. Sometimes people email me that way. But also, if you want to just comment live, again, shout out to everybody watching on Rockfin Odyssey, DLive, YouTube, Facebook, elsewhere. We appreciate you. So, Micah, what's going on with the European Central Bank? What's happening over there?
Well, you know, some of these stories I kind of thought we should just like mention briefly, but, you know, they're falling in step with like the central banks around the world right now and raising the rates, you know, making it more difficult for people to get credit, which you got to ask yourself, do you really need credit? A lot of people apparently do for things like home buys and stuff like that. I don't understand it, but still it's said to matter. Nonetheless, they say their inflation's hit a record of 8.6%, and that they have basically raised it larger than expected, and it's the first time in 11 years that they have raised rates. So, you know, it looks like the economic world across, you know, Europe and Americas is all turning towards, you know, recession looking outlooks, you know, central banks driving up, getting credit harder, you know, loans costing more. You know, they say basically by making credit harder to get, rate increases can slow economic growth. And that's what the, you know, is a recession, right? The major conundrum for the European Central Bank and for the Federal Reserve. Fed raised rates by an outsized 0.75 point in June and could do again this month. Bank of England started the march higher in December, and Switzerland's central bank surprised for its first annual increase in nearly 15 years last month. The goal for all central banks is to get inflation down to acceptable levels, because inflation's out of control across Europe, across nations that haven't even had to, you know, adjust their interest rates in 15 years. So, you know.
Well, Micah, let me ask you something. So like you were saying a couple of moments ago, which I mean, for me, I tend to agree, but, you know, obviously we have all kinds of listeners here. When you say, like, you know, do people really need credit, right? Like, I think what you're alluding to is the idea that we can maybe live our lives without needing to be even concerned with these numbers and these rate hikes and this and that, right? Like, that it might affect us still to some degree, but why is it that people even look to these institutions? You know, obviously it's a big question, but why do they look to them and care what, you know, why do we allow them to control credit? And why do we allow this, you know, world where we where we think that we need that credit? Where is this all coming from?
I like that question, even though it's really broad. I think that more or less we don't allow them, but people acquiesce to them because there's a system put into place that codifies them to a certain degree. The Federal Reserve Act of 1913. And so that's what gets their foot in the door. And then after that, big institutional investors, they really pay attention to these rates because they make a big difference on, you know, how much. Look at how many people have a Visa card or a MasterCard or Discover in their wallet. Not to mention all the little store cards, Best Buys, I got it for 6 months, no payments, you know, these little things like that all over that people stumble over and end up having to pay some interest somehow, because that's what they're hoping for, right? And then never mind your car loans, your student loans, your mortgages, and even your judgments from civil cases are all affected by the interest rate set by these central banksters. So that's why it affects us, Derek. That's why it affects you and I directly. And as they make it more difficult to get credit, we know that all the money is basically introduced as debt. If you don't have money, you're going to pay more to get new money. And meanwhile, prices are going up. And they think that what that'll do is, you know, prices will come down to meet what consumers are willing to pay, which is less than their inflated prices. I don't know. Sometimes I think it's the growing of the wheat and then the chopping of it off. I really think it works this way and that it's a constant cycle, you know, and this is how they make their money.
Yeah, I appreciate that explanation. Let's jump forward now. You're listening to Live Free, Think Free on 90.1 KPFT Houston. We do this every Friday, 5 p.m., and we do this every week.
Let's go to China.
China's the next one. Let's talk about China.
I think this one's relevant. We've talked about it. I think, as you pointed out earlier, some of the stories that we've had recently, they're all fitting together on this episode. But nonetheless, I accidentally closed part of what I wanted to get into. So it turns out that Chinese regulators took fresh steps this week to defuse anger over a banking fraud. And we talked about this, and you spoke how people were being basically turned away. It turned violent, in fact. Police rushed the crowd, and we talked about that a lot last episode. But the scandal has triggered widespread protests from outraged depositors since April and cast a harsh spotlight on the 4,000 small and medium-sized banks sprinkled across China. In their bid to shore up confidence among depositors, Henan and Anhui provinces stated making repayments to smaller depositors on July 5th, started remaking payments to smaller depositors on July 15th, following investigation by authorities and arrests of suspects, shuffling some heads around there. It just shows you the power, they can basically stop your payments. And this is what's happening in, Chinese banks. And what do they do when you finally get so upset and so many people are rioting for months and stuff about it? Well, turns out that individuals with deposits of up to 100,000 yuan, by the way, that's $14,700, they'll get paid back. So hope you didn't have 24,000 in there. Hope you didn't just sell your house. Hope you didn't, have something like that go on. The Henan branch of the China Banking and Insurance Regulatory Commission and the Provincial Financial Bureau said in a joint statement. In the end, I think people need to realize you're just trusting these people. No, you're giving them your money and you're just trusting them. And you may or may not get it back. And some insurance company or some government thing will tell you something today, but who knows what will happen tomorrow. So, yeah.
That's crazy, though. That's like less than $15,000 U.S. And, I mean, that's what – okay, look. In the United States, if you make less than $20,000, they consider that to be below the poverty line. So most people, I think, well, not I don't want to say most, but a lot of people make more than that. And if they had more savings than that, in that case, and then they live in these provinces and they're making these repayments, okay, we'll pay it back. But in this case, you're basically out of luck, right?
At least in the short term.
Pretty nuts. And like you said, Mike, I think that's, I'm going to keep mentioning going back to earlier this year, the Canadian bank accounts being frozen for supporting those convoys. Now the thing here in China, the people being, those are banks, economic related specifically. But I think the overall picture here is that you can't get your gas without a QR code, can't get your you know, your bank unless we say so. You can't travel without the COVID shot or the permission or this. You know, is the picture becoming more clear?
That you can't buy or sell without the mark? Is that what you're saying? Yeah, it certainly points
something like that. Sounds familiar.
Something seems like I've heard about things like this. I'm not sure. But, yeah, and, you know, I think it's interesting. I'm glad you're going there. That's the next thing I wanted to get into is the overall financial situation. And as usual in the United States, things aren't matching what their estimates and they said they would be. And we watched you know, gold take a little tumble there. But, yeah, it turns back. But now it's already back above 1,700 and weekless jobless claims rise. But yep, that's right. And check it out. This isn't the only week they've risen. Falling momentum in the U.S. labor market is creating further selling pressure on the U.S. dollar, which is pushing gold prices into neutral territory. Thursday, the U.S. Labor Department said weekly jobless claims rose 7,000 to 251,000, up from the week's previous revised estimates of 244,000 claims. So just up and up. The labor market data missed expectations. According to consensus forecast, economists were expecting to see jobless claims fall. Whew. This is the third week initial jobless claims has missed expectations. Claims have risen for seven consecutive weeks. Gold market continues to push further following the disappointing employment data. August gold futures last traded at $1,700 an ounce, roughly neutral on the day. And counting jobless claims, which represent the number of people already receiving benefits, were at 1.384 million during the week ending in July 9th, rising 51,000 from the previous week's levels. So think about that. There's 1.384 million people out there that are basically continuing jobless claims, getting unemployment. Think of all the other people that are unemployed, that, you know, are in tents, stuff like that. They aren't even counted in these numbers, you know, but we count them when we help them out. We count them when we give to a food bank. We count them when we do things like that. So they're definitely a part of our society. But the point here is that they're also affecting the economics of our society. So this isn't everyone. Some people have gone unemployed half a year ago or a year ago, 2 years ago. And then there's all kinds of wonderful people that are entrepreneurial in spirit that aren't even counted in their numbers at all here. Or even if they, you know, are business owners, even if it's small, but there's a lot of people that just survive and make a limited income and don't ever go get unemployment. So I don't know. I think it's hard to see, but I think what's happening and what we can get from the numbers is that all their numbers are off. All their expectations are off. Their transitory inflation was transitory to another level, and, you know, then we'll transit to another one. I mean, come on, who ever heard of it going back? I mean, really, not for long.
Yeah, you're listening to Live Free, Think Free here on KPFT. We're down to our final few minutes, and Micah and I have been discussing some economic stuff. We've talked about digital identities today. We've talked about Houston's gun buyback program. You want to get into this final story, Micah, before we get out of here for today?
Yeah,
it's kind of a continuation.
Yeah, it's pretty much. I just wanted to mention it more or less that it turns out that the cryptos are just booming again. I won't say they're booming like they were for those that wrote that, but come on. I mean, you're looking at up 7% and 8% like quickly. Bitcoin and Ethereum are seeing further relief in a move that reflects traders' widened risk appetite in the cryptocurrency ahead of the next week's Federal Reserve meeting. Everyone knows the Fed's going to keep raising interest rates, right? The world's largest digital token by market cap is jumping 7.7% to 24.03K as of shortly before 10 this, I guess it was on Wednesday. And Ethereum jumped a 3.8 and Doge 8.6. Come on. I mean, if you fell for Elon Musk selling you some Doge, that might have been your chance to get out. Cardano 5.3 and Shiba 7.3 right there, you know, running percentage close to Bitcoin's. And they're saying the crypto market partially recovery comes amid more than 500 million in Ethereum short liquidations and nearly 1 billion in total crypto short liquidations, meaning traders are buying back borrowed crypto after previously betting on it going down. kind of like short selling a stock. Traders will be eyeing the Fed's interest rate decision July 27th. The markets are pricing in a 66.8 probability of a 75 basis point hike, which would mean a softer move than what markets expected last week, an 80.3% chance that the Fed will lift its target by 109 basis points. I think it's interesting that you ask how it matters. I mean, here's the crypto market. Here's everything reacting to these bankers and you know, what they're going to drive this supposedly free market. And, you know, that's the thing. I get it. But I just don't tell me we got a free market, and because we don't. And
No, we don't. Well, and we don't have much time either. That's about all we got for this evening, guys. We appreciate all of you who are here with us on our weekly show. We'll be back next week. I will say, since we're making a name change, you should be able to find our music and our shows at all the same places, but the name is going to change. It won't be under Freethinker Radio anymore. So look out for that. And
The end of an era.
Hey, pay attention to what's going on. We've been trying to inform you guys for over a decade now, and we're going to continue to do that here on KPFT and everywhere else we broadcast, because these are some important times. I'm going to end with one of my own songs. This is called Rising. See you guys next week. Peace.
Rising.
There's something new for you. I ain't up next, cause I'm here right now. 33 is here! I'm never gonna stop, man, I'ma keep rising. I'm too strong to kill, I'ma keep fighting. I live every day like it's gonna be my last, and I keep on rising cause I'm better than my past. I'm never gonna stop, man, I'ma keep rising. I'm too strong to kill, yo, I'ma keep fighting. I live every day like it's gonna be my last, and I keep on rising cause I'm better than my past. I'm better than my past and I'm never going back. Back to the place where it all went black. I lost myself for a minute, now I see the truth in me, and it's hard to believe. It felt like time is just slipping away, like I'm stuck in a loop, same shit every day. There's better days ahead, I can feel it in my bones. I need to find a way out and stop selling stones. Someone told me that we choose the life we live. Our souls knew the path before.